At AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab. That's AveMariaRadio.net under the store tab.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Rest in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
A good Catholic is a faithful citizen.
Make America great again!
What's more important here is not saving the country, it's saving your soul.
It's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off for us.
Trust in the media has hit its lowest point.
I want the truth!
What is truth?
Age of the passive layperson can't go on.
It's our job to share that love of Christ with these people.
This is an excellent mission, sir, with an extremely valuable objective.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Al, this is an excellent program.
You have a wonderful show.
I love listening in my car.
That's a great question to start off with.
You are in for a show tonight.
Here we go again.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta with another hour talking about the things that matter most. Dr. Meg Meeker will join us in the first segment of today's program. A public high school in southeast Michigan, Saline High School, is considering changes to the sex ed curriculum there, which would include bringing in Planned Parenthood officials to teach on contraception, dealing with LGBTQ issues, and more. We want to look at that story and the state of sex ed in our nation's schools. Our focus, the segment is occasioned by a local problem, but we're going to look at it as a national problem, because what's happening in Saline High School is happening all across the nation. And again, Dr. Meeker has done, I don't think I know anybody who's doing a better job of getting out accurate information on teenage sexuality. So she'll be joining us and with a number of recommendations, so stay with us. And then I'm going to take some time to talk about, I don't know what you might want to call it, a theology of animals. We're approaching the first anniversary of the killing of Harambe, the gorilla. This was last year. You know, this is, you might remember, a three-year-old boy climbed into a gorilla enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo and ended up getting grabbed and dragged around by this western lowland gorilla named Harambe. And a zoo worker shot and killed Harambe because he feared for the boy's life. Well, the incident was caught up on video, and so it got international coverage and commentary right away. Much of the commentary decrying what they regarded as the unnecessary killing of Harambe the gorilla. And there were even vicious attacks on the mother of the child, even calling for her prosecution. And of course then what happens, you get reactionary voices kind of mocking others for their sentimentality, for projecting onto the gorilla human features, human worth, right? We're going to take a look at the circumstances. I think it's very clear in my mind, the zoo worker absolutely did the right thing. That event unfolded over 10 minutes. That little boy had climbed over a fence. He was a persistent and determined little kid. He had gotten over a 3-foot-tall fence, went through 4 feet of bushes, and then fell 15 feet into this moat of shallow water. And there were actually 3 gorillas there at the time. 2 of them responded to the zoo officials and went back inside. And, you know, got off the stage, so to speak. But Harambe was curious, resisted the call of the zoo officials, and he climbed down into the moat to investigate the kid. I mean, the kid was splashing water down there, so Harambe wants to know, who's this in my house? Now, you can, imagine yourself watching this whole thing and what you would have done, right? Yes, me too. I'd be screaming. And for the next 10 minutes, Harambe became agitated and disoriented because the onlookers were screaming. They were agitated and disoriented. You know, you have this three-year-old and what they, all everybody was sure was in danger of imminent death from this 400-pound gorilla. Well, we're going to pick up on that story and develop, we might call it, theology of animals coming up later in this hour. But first, the news headlines.
Thank you, Al. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. For Thursday, May 18th, it's the feast of Pope St. John the First. And today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds at AveMariaFunds.com. GOP House Speaker Paul Ryan agrees with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's assessment that there should be less drama coming out of the Trump White House.
I just think it's very important that people know that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And sure, drama is not helpful in getting things done, but we're still getting things done.
In a Capitol briefing today, Ryan dismissed speculation about distractions. He said the Republican-led Congress continues moving forward with important work. The Pope is giving France's new president some advice. In a private message for Emmanuel Macron, Pope Francis urged a progressive, secularist incoming president not to forget his country's rich moral and spiritual traditions, including Christianity. Problems with unemployment and terrorism are among the issues awaiting Macron when he takes office. The 39-year-old president-elect says it's his duty to let everybody practice their religion with dignity, but believes the laws of the Republic must be put ahead of religious law. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says there's no indication that terrorism was a motive behind a crash that left one dead and over 20 injured.
23 individuals were injured in this incident. And that includes, tragically, one young woman who has passed away.
The car slammed into pedestrians in New York's famous Times Square. De Blasio described driver Richard Rojas as a U.S. citizen who is a former member of the Navy. The 26-year-old has a history of arrest for driving under the influence. Officials say four were taken to the hospital with critical injuries, but those people are likely to survive. Former Fox News chief Roger Ailes was reportedly in a coma before his death this morning at the age of 77. TMZ says Ailes fell and hit his head at his Palm Beach, Florida home last week and fell into a coma. Ailes' biographer Gabriel Sherman tweeted today that he was told he had a blood clot from the fall. Ailes is largely considered and credited with being the driving force behind the success of Fox News, but was forced out as CEO last year amid sexual harassment allegations. Rocker Chris Cornell's death is being ruled a suicide. The Wayne County Medical Examiner in Michigan says the cause of death has been determined as suicide by hanging, though a full autopsy hasn't been completed. Police tell the Detroit Free Press that Cornell was found on the floor of his Detroit hotel room last night and unresponsive. Just hours earlier, he and his band Soundgarden had played at the Fox Theater. The 52-year-old, who was also the frontman for Audioslave, is considered a pioneer of the 1990s Seattle grunge movement. And now for your fascinating fact for the day. Before modern refrigeration, Russians dropped frogs in their milk to keep it fresh. Filling in for Dick Tom, Steve Clark, Ave Maria, Radio News.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Got a note the other day from a listener pointing out that a high school in southeast Michigan, Saline High School, is considering changes to their sex ed curriculum, which would include bringing in Planned Parenthood to teach the kids and to address, you know, a whole number of LGBT issues. And this is happening all around the country, so I don't feel this is simply a local problem. We hear about this happening all over the United States. And again, parents here in southeast Michigan, parents are meeting. In fact, they had a meeting last night and another one coming up on May 30th. So, you know, let me urge you, if you want to follow this locally, it's Saline Citizens for Healthy Age-Appropriate Sex Ed. That's their Facebook group, Saline Citizens for Healthy Age-Appropriate Sex Ed. But as I say, these problems are not just local. They're all over the United States. I've asked Dr. Meg Meeker to join us. Meg is a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics, serves on the advisory board of the Medical Institute. You can follow her work at megmeekermed.com. And it's good to have you with me, Meg. Thanks.
Thank you for having me, Al.
Yeah. So these kind of changes in sex ed curricula are going on around the country. They've sparked new concerns on the part of parents. How different are the changes coming compared to where we were 5 years ago?
Well, I think they're evolving quickly. One of the good things, at least in public schools, is that they're slowed down a bit because they have to go through an approval process, and I think that's a good thing because it does slow them down. But I think that there's a profound misunderstanding in sex education across the country. First of all, it is not driven by largely reviewed by physicians who understand, the complications to sexual activity
Sure.
of kids.
Sure.
It is really driven by many who have an agenda to, what's the word I'm looking for, to further sexual freedom. And to sort of say sexual freedom extends to very young children. This is an American right. And so our sex education must reflect this. So that's what's changing and evolving over the past few years, is that flavor in there. You know, no longer are they taught sex is risky, high risk, as physicians describe it in every medical journal around the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high-risk behavior, just like drinking and smoking and taking drugs.
Yeah.
It's in the same category as physicians are concerned. But what kids are taught in school is, oh, it really isn't. And by the way, you can't really control your choices anyway because they're so deeply wired into you.
Yeah.
It's okay to act on your impulses. It's not going to harm you psychologically or physically. So we just want to help do damage control, i.e. talk to you about birth control. And it's a very complicated issue from a medical standpoint because children are not the problem. As sex ed teachers would say, well, just keep kids from getting pregnant. No, children are not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They are the blessing. They're the good thing that comes out of sex. What is a problem is the psychological and physical devastation to a kid, a teenager, having sex out of marriage. There are profound ramifications. We see this as adults in marriages and the divorce rate and everything. So parents need to really study what is being taught in their schools.
When parents have raised objections on issues like this, they're accused of being narrow-minded, they're accused of being moralistic, sometimes they're accused of being religious fundamentalists. What you're saying is that, look, the medical literature is on their side here.
And I cataloged it. I have a book called Your Kids at Risk, and I catalog all of it. I talk about, I have a whole chapter on the emotional effects of kids that are documented in studies. And we have more research. See, this is the thing that really gets my ire.
Yeah, physicians
know, obstetricians, psychiatrists, pediatricians, internists know that sex is not good for kids. But they don't speak out against it, not because they don't know, but because they don't have time.
Mm-hmm.
They're battling their own battles.
Yeah.
They're just trying to keep their heads above water. And there's huge backlash politically. You know, I have debated Planned Parenthood. I work with an organization that lobbied Congress on sex education. It is not fun because we are up against fighting sexual freedom in kids, and when you do that, there's a financial cost to many organizations out there.
Mm-hmm.
Planned Parenthood, for one. Companies like Abercrombie and Fitch who are selling sex to kids.
Mm-hmm.
It goes on and on and on. And so we're up against giant bullies, but in response to the question you had earlier, you know, how are parents supposed to respond because they're called this and this and this? And my how I would say to parents is, who cares? Really, who cares what names people call you? We're talking about your kids' lives here.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your number one priority, is to raise kids who come to marriage without sexually transmitted infections, without post-traumatic stress because they've been sexually active with too many kids, which, by the way, boys are more likely to have than girls, because they're taught to believe that there is no consequence to sexual activity with many partners before marriage. Oh, yes, there is.
Right.
Depression is one of them. And we've got the suicide rates in kids climbing.
Right.
And so this is our job as good, godly parents, is to teach our kids the truth.
The book is called Your Kids at Risk, right? I want to make sure people get a hold of that. And we'll have it available in our online bookstore as well, Your Kids at Risk. And I know that you've published a new book, Hero, Being the Strong Father Your Children Need. And I think Nick talked to you. We're going to come back on that book in the near future to discuss it at length. I wanted to focus in on this topic today, though, because of its immediacy in Southeast Michigan.
Yeah.
Now, so what is a strategy that parents can employ here? Usually, one parent realizes there's a problem. They go into the school. They talk about it. The school, depending on the administration, says, well, you're the only one we've heard about that.
No.
And they tend to marginalize the complaining parent.
Yeah.
So what do they do to know they're not alone?
Okay. First of all, every parent needs to not be intimidated. That's an intimidation tactic.
Mm-hmm.
You are not alone, because the truth is most parents, even secular parents,
mm-hmm.
are out there, don't want their 15, 16-year-old kids sexually active.
That's right.
And so a lot is on your side. The parents are on your side, but you're being intimidated by the school. Second, you need to know about this organization, because it has every resource you need. The Medical Institute for Sexual Health. It's medinstitute.org. It's a group of physicians it's a nonprofit organization that compiles all the medical literature about abstinence education, comprehensive sex education, abortion, contraception, everything. And it's all the medical literature is on your side that tells sex is not safe for kids, emotionally or physically. I mean, spiritually it isn't either, but they don't write about that.
Right.
So you need to know that you have all the ammunition you need. Do not be intimidated. And here's the other thing that's very, very important for parents to realize. Your children need to hear from you about what you think about them being sexually active, because that's ultimately what's going to determine their behavior, not their teachers, not a sex ed teacher, and even not their peers, because studies also show that mom and dad are the ones who influence the decisions about high-risk behaviors that kids make. So parents need to do the teaching. Don't be intimidated.
Meg, thank you so much. We'll have you back soon to talk about Hero, but I appreciate your help. The Medical Institute, again, it's medinstitute.org. And the book is called Your Kids at Risk. Thanks, Meg.
Thank you, Al.
Dr. Meg Meeker, again, Your Kids at Risk and medinstitute.org.
Hallelujah, brothers and sisters. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. Hello, friends. This is Father Patrick from the Archdiocese of Detroit's Office of Evangelization, wishing you and all yours a happy Easter. You know, friends, when the early apostles saw that Jesus Christ was risen from the dead, everything changed. Can you imagine the joy that they experienced when they saw the risen Christ? All their hopes and dreams, a life lived in the love of God, a life lived with the joy of Christ who filled their deepest desires. Can you imagine the joy they experienced when they saw the risen Christ? Brothers and sisters, that's the joy Jesus wants for us. And that's the joy that Jesus wants us to share with the world. I want to invite you this Easter season, get busted for being joyful. Let somebody ask you, geez, you're in a good mood. Why are you in such a good mood? And let them know, it's Jesus. It's the joy of Easter. He is alive. And I want to invite you to consider purchasing a subscription to the Michigan Catholic for yourself or for someone you love. Visit themichigancatholic.org. It's a great way to keep that fire of divine love going in your heart. God bless you, friends.
As we move into the warm weather months, consider stepping up your kids' game while encouraging their faith through Quest Sports Camps. Kids love Quest because they can sharpen volleyball, soccer, basketball, and football fundamentals, more deeply encounter Christ through the witness of our faith-filled counselors, and make new friends. Register now for Quest Sports Camps in Grand Blanc, Brighton, Ann Arbor, Canton, and New Boston. Register now at QuestSportsCamps.com. That's QuestSportsCamps.com.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Join us for our Time to Mow sale going on now through May 20th. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our Time to Mow sale specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
Looking for affordable Catholic health care? Look no further. CMF Curo is the only Catholic health ministry which provides an established health care program, spiritual growth opportunities within Catholic community, and unique wellness programs and health tools. Plus, it is half the cost of many insurances. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com or visit cmfcuro.com. CMF Curo, it's my Catholic health care.
The following message is from a nonprofit group and underwriter of this Ave Maria radio program.
Go forth and preach the good news. It's not just a suggestion. If you want to take more seriously the command of Jesus to share the gospel with those around you, consider joining St. Paul Street Evangelization. It's a grassroots organization that brings the Catholic faith to the streets. St. Paul Street Evangelization will show you how to share your faith in a non-confrontational way. Visit their website, streetevangelization.com, to learn more. That's streetevangelization.com.
You remember the day you first laid eyes on her. They handed you the keys and you drove back home for everyone to admire. And although the memories have been made, it's time to pass the torch to someone else. Consider donating your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Even if it's not running, we'll take care of everything from pickup to your tax receipt. Just call 866-628-CARS to show you just how easy it is to donate. That's 866-628-CARS. And mention Ave Maria Radio.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta, thanking you for joining us. We're approaching the first anniversary of the killing of Harambe. I have no idea who's going to spend any time thinking about this. You remember Harambe the gorilla? This was last year, May 28th. A three-year-old boy climbed into the gorilla enclosure at the Cincinnati Zoo. And Harambe, 17-year-old Western lowland gorilla, grabbed the boy. And a zoo worker shot and killed Harambe because the zoo worker feared for the boy's life. I described this in some length at the top of the hour. And I wanted to go into one of the things that I thought was sad. I mean, the zoo worker did exactly what the zoo worker had to do. I mean, as I said, this event unfolded over 10 minutes. And there was every reason to believe. I mean, some people second-guessed the zoo, saying that, oh, no, Harambe was actually going to protect the little boy. And, look, Jane Goodall originally said something like that, but then in a fuller conversation, thankfully, she said that the zoo had no choice but to kill Harambe. And, again, most of those who study gorillas and other primatologists like Franz de Waal, as well as Jane Goodall, so there was no other way. The zoo had to do it. Well, lots of jokes abounded, and I confess I laughed at some of them. There's a lot of sentimental hysteria about the killing of the gorilla, and there was a lot of hard-hearted humor and reaction to the somewhat sentimental hysteria. But one thing that I didn't hear about was Christianity. I didn't hear anything about the church's teaching on animal life. I didn't hear anything about Scripture. Because the Scriptures and the Catholic Church sees that all of creation forms a type of community, kind of a community of the created. Look, the human is qualitatively different from the lower beasts. The human is made in the image and likeness of God and received the breath of life from God. But they weren't created in opposition to the animals, in a cooperative relationship with the animals. And unfortunately, a lot of what passed for right-headed thinking at that time was something like this. Look, animals don't have immortal souls, so we can do whatever we want with them. But that's not the teaching of the church. And exactly how to live out a proper theology of animals, it's not clear how, especially since we haven't lived out a proper theology of humans very well. But it is still there in the teaching of the church. And I suspect that over the next generation, we're going to be forced to think a lot more about treatment of animals, just like we've been forced to think about treatment of the environment. And unfortunately, even though we started the environment, Christians started the environmental discussion two generations ago, and even though we started the discussion about proper treatment of animals back in the middle of the 19th century, overall Christians have been not in leadership in either of these movements to protect the environment and to lobby for the better treatment of animals. And in both the environmental movement and the so-called animal rights movement, there have been extraordinary excesses which a Christian understanding of the world would have corrected. But we've been kind of AWOL on this. And you say, is this important? Well, yeah, it is important. I mean, it's a varying degrees of importance. I mean, Benedict XVI thought, for instance, you may be surprised at this, Benedict XVI thought that factory farming of animals, you know, the de-beaking of chickens, stuffed into cages so tiny that they can't even flap their wings, or veal calves being deliberately undernourished and chained or tethered inside dock boxes, he thought this use of animals as commodities was not morally justified. Now, he's not just a lone sentimental voice in this whole thing. Back in the 6th century, St. Benedict instructed monks in his rule to refrain entirely from eating the flesh of quadrupeds, except for the sick, who are weak. John Henry Newman taught that the innocence and vulnerability of animals could actually teach us to better resonate with the sufferings of Christ. That's a strange quote. Think, my brethren, of your feelings at cruelty practiced on brute animals, and you'll gain some sort of feeling which the history of Christ's cross and passion excite within us. So the best thinkers and many of the saints have had I think of St. Francis of Assisi, for instance. They've had a richer understanding of animal treatment, animal life, our relationship to the animals. I confess, I haven't thought much about this in all of my Christian life. And last year, when this Harambe discussion broke out, I was angry. I thought they did exactly the right thing, and I thought the reaction of people was way off base. But I'm also angry when I see modern animal rights groups distort the church's teaching on animals as though we are, quote, anti-animal, or we're practicing a form of speciesism. This is, I'm not sympathetic at all to the language of animal rights, as you know from my many conversations with Wes Smith, whose blog, Human Exceptionalism, we recommend all the time. But I am sympathetic with the problem of animal suffering and animal welfare. And unfortunately, there's very little Christian reflection on this topic at exactly the time in which the world is spending a lot of time working through animal issues. And unfortunately, there are many Christians who don't pursue this at all because they've been intimidated by hard-hearted people on the right who think that animals can be trivialized and treated without concern for animal suffering. That's simply not the teaching of the church. We'll talk a little about Thomas Aquinas on this, because he held this teaching in wonderful balance. I appreciated Matthew Scully's book, Dominion, The Power of Man, the Suffering of Animals, and the Call to Mercy. Scully had worked as a senior speechwriter to President George W. Bush, also for Dan Quayle and Dick Cheney. He's the fellow who wrote the famous Sarah Palin acceptance speech at the Republican convention. Matthew Scully is one of the few politically conservative figures to actually think in terms of proper treatment of animals. He's not alone. I mean, the great pro-life champion Chris Smith in New Jersey has also worked in this area. Former Senator Wayne Allard of Colorado, Bob Smith in New Hampshire also were interested in this area. But they didn't bring to this a full-blown Catholic understanding of animals. So let me approach this topic from the standpoint of, you might say, fighting back against the false way in which the church and its teaching have been represented. Look, is biblical teaching responsible for neglect or mistreatment of animals? Absolutely not. First of all, animals are God's idea. He likes them. He made them. He calls them good. And what God calls good shouldn't be despised or treated shabbily. The Wisdom of Solomon has this line in it. For you love all things, this is addressing God, for you love all things that are, and loathe nothing that you have made. For you would not fashion what you hate. How could a thing remain unless you willed it, or be preserved, had it not been called forth by you? But you spare all things, because they are yours, O ruler and lover of souls, for your imperishable spirit is in all things. So the fact of being created by God elevates the animals as an object of our, at very least, appreciation. Whatever's created by God is worth knowing and worth loving. So humans were created in God's image, unlike any other created thing. We were created in God's image and to serve as co-regents with God over the creation. Cultivating it, developing it, stewarding it. I mean, notice the scripture begins in a garden and ends in a city, the heavenly Jerusalem. Cultural and social development was intended by God from the very beginning. And animals, no doubt, were intended to be part of that. Now, we were more aware of it, I think, before the rise of modern transportation and farming machinery. But animals are still in God's plan in some way. What we call human dominion, you know, have dominion over the earth, is the phrase that people remember from Genesis chapter 1, verse 28. Human dominion, that is, you know, our authority over nature, extends to the animal world. So this human dominion is over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the ground. Now, we don't have a might makes right type of philosophy, kind of a domination over nature. But we're supposed to be having a harmonious cultivation of it. And most Old Testament scholars, when they see this dominion mandate, recognize right away that what it is, it's a statement of proper stewardship and cultivation. We're the ones that are naming the animals. The animals aren't naming us. We're the ones that are cultivating the animals. The animals aren't cultivating us. In fact, the Catholic Church in its catechism puts it this way: man's dominion over inanimate and other living beings granted by the Creator is not absolute. It is limited by concern for the quality of life of his neighbor, including generations to come. It requires a religious respect for the integrity of creation. So, you know, when people look at our environmental problems, which we've done in America and in Europe, we've done a great deal to solve them, not so in India and China. But environmental problems, threats to biodiversity, mistreatment of animals, are all a result of abusing the authority that God gave us for the good of creation. Again, the biblical story is unambiguous. Humans are exceptional. And there's nothing arrogant in making this assertion. So unfortunately, some of our most honored fellow humans are trying to get us to reduce the estimate of the human person. They claim that by talking about human beings as made in God's image, we're practicing speciesism. I heard that term about 35 years ago. I thought it was silly. I never thought it would catch on. And yet, now it's becoming part of the isms that we are regularly accused of. Racism, sexism, ageism, heterosexualism, ethnocentrism, nationalism, McCarthyism, speciesism. Look, the Crusaders against species image, speciesism, think that the only way they can secure proper treatment of animals is by knocking human beings down. So Stephen Hawking said that humans are just a chemical scum on the surface of a typical planet. The founder of PETA once said, famously, a rat is a pig is a dog is a boy, and compares eating meat to the Nazi Holocaust. And Oakley says that the animal rights movement is at odds with supremacist Christian teachings. Take a break. We'll come back and continue this look at, you might call it, a theology of animals.
Hi, I'm Dan Weingartz. Join us for our Time to Mow sale going on now through May 20th. Our family has been helping families like yours choose the right power equipment for your lawn since 1945. Our experts will help you choose the right product from top brands like Steel. From legendary chainsaws, dependable trimmers, and powerful blowers, a Steel is designed for reliability and built for the long haul. Visit us to see the full Steel line or see all of our Time to Mow sale specials at Weingartz.com.
Weingartz, Weingartz, everything from lawn to snow.
This is Lewis Brown, director of CMF Curo, a Catholic healthcare ministry that provides an affordable Catholic healthcare option nationwide. We have come to a unique time in our history. Healthcare costs are rising, and our religious freedom is being challenged. CMF Curo empowers you to live the new evangelization in your healthcare. Visit our website for more information about CMF Curo. Go to cmfcuro.com. That's cmfcuro.com. Christian caring, Christian sharing.
We are truly blessed with living in a free country, experiencing great spring weather, and having great friends. Hi, I'm Dan Hall from Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, and we're also blessed to offer great low lease payments on all Ram, Jeep, and Dodge products during our Drive and Discover event going on now. For example, you can drive a new Ram pickup, Dodge Journey, or Durango for as low as $229 per month, or a Jeep Patriot, Compass, or the all-new Jeep Renegade for only $199 per month, only at Pinckney Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram, or visit us online at PinckneyChrysler.com.
Hello, this is Dan Dimite
and Patrick Rice, and we are the co-hosts of Encounter Radio, the show that brings you the life-changing encounters of ordinary people that launch them into lives of extraordinary mission.
Encounter Radio is the show where the supernatural becomes natural and where you are encouraged and equipped to live out your calling every day in boldness and power.
You can now hear Encounter Radio on this Ave Maria station every Sunday at 2 p.m. That's every Sunday at 2 p.m. and online at encounterradio.org.
Today's preview of this Sunday's Gospel is brought to you by the Truth and Life Audio Bible, available on the Ave Maria Radio app and at AveMariaRadio.net/Bible.
If you love me, you will keep my commandments, and I will pray the Father, and he will give you another counselor to be with you forever, even the Spirit of Truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him, for he dwells with you and will be in you. I will not leave you desolate. I will come to you. Yet a little while, and the world will see me no more, but you will see me. Because I live, you will live also. In that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you. He who has my commandments and keeps them, he it is who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. If a man loves me, he will keep my word, and my Father will love him, and we will come to him and make our home with him. He who does not love me does not keep my words. And the word which you hear is not mine, but the Father's who sent me. These things I have spoken to you while I am still with you. But the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, he will teach you all things and bring to your remembrance all that I have said to you.
Get your copy today right on your smartphone in the Ave Maria Radio app or by going to AveMariaRadio.net/Bible.
I'm Al Cresta talking about I'm suspecting there's going to be some conversation coming up towards the end of May on the first anniversary of the killing of Harambe, that gorilla in the Cincinnati Zoo last year. Harambe got killed because he was threatening the life of a three-year-old who had got made his way into this gorilla enclosure. And I'm suggesting that it dawned on me that in both the environmental area and in the animal treatment area, animal rights, whatever you want to call it, we don't hear many Christian voices. And yet, Christians are at the forefront of the conservation movement in the 19th and early 20th century. And Christians were at the forefront of the societies to prevent cruelty to animals. And yet today, Christian voices, we're away without leave here. We're AWOL. We're not hearing those voices. We may have been thrown out, but the point is we're not there. And we ought to have something to say, since animals are God's idea. And human beings have dominion over the animals. And so what does that mean? And that's what we're discussing today. Look, so many of those who are claiming that they want to put an end to speciesism are really, in the long run, slicing their own throat. You know, when you reduce the human to the level of the animals, you're not raising the animals. You're simply lowering the human. You reduce humans to the level of the animals and you rid them of any moral responsibility they have for the creatures. If you deny that humanity has a divine mandate to care for creation, you're demotivating the very creature who God appointed to clean up the mess. By the way, that's the major point of Pope Francis's encyclical Laudato Si. If there is no God, if humanity is nothing but an accidental result of naturalistic forces that had no prevision of the end they were achieving, if this life is all there is, then why should we worry about the state of the earth generations from now? Certainly, you shouldn't be worrying about the beasts. So, in Genesis 1, the human is unique, the only creature expressly made in God's image and likeness. There's really no doubt about that. The human beings continued to have a responsibility for the animals. Noah's Ark powerfully illustrates that God wants to use humans to, you might say, quote, save, redeem animals. The ark was a sanctuary for both human and animals, and Noah exercised a proper dominion over the animals by saving them. Again, they don't have immortal souls, so don't think I'm going there. I'm not. But even though he had dominion over them, that didn't keep God from saying that he should receive them as food. So after the flood, meat is given to man to eat. Before that time, it looks as though only plants were given to human beings as food. Look at Genesis 1, verse 29. And so you get the picture that before the fall, there was a shalom between animals and Adam. Adam and Eve, most likely, according to the Genesis text, were vegetarians. Now, again, that doesn't mandate that we be vegetarians, because obviously throughout Scripture, God has given animals for meat. And you can actually, if you look at the teaching some of the medieval theologians, and the late Archbishop Fulton Sheen got into this a little bit in his teaching. I mean, he pointed out that, look, the lower kingdoms find their best in sacrifice to the higher kingdom. So plants become part of the animal kingdom when they're ingested by the animal kingdom. Animals, by serving the human kingdom, are elevated to becoming part of the human kingdom by being ingested by the human kingdom. Humans, by submitting themselves to God, become part of the divine family by feeding on the Eucharist, the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on this, but there is in one area of Catholic thinking, though, a way that the lower kingdoms serve themselves up to the higher kingdoms, and it's for the well-being of both kingdoms. Look, the Old Testament, when the Old Testament deals with animals, it makes it clear that the humans are supposed to inculcate kindness towards animals. So work on the Sabbath is forbidden to cattle, forbidden to donkeys, oxen. You can't work your beasts on the Sabbath. You're not permitted to muzzle the ox as it's treading out the corn. You can break the Sabbath regulation if you need to relieve an animal's distress and discomfort. Jesus pointed to humanitarian treatment of animals on the Sabbath. So, I mean, think of how highly the Jews regarded the Sabbath. And again, one of the reasons that you could set aside certain Sabbath regulations was to take care of your animals if they're in distress. In the wisdom literature, you see something similar. God is presented as delighting in the animals for their own sake. There's a wonderful passage from the book of Proverbs. The righteous person or the just person knows the needs of his animal. I mean, God is presented as a good shepherd, right? And in the prophets, you get this vision of a universe transformed. So from Isaiah, we get this picture of the wolf lying down with the lamb, the leopard lying down with the goat, the calf and the lion and the yearling together, with a little child leading them. The cow will feed with the bear. Their young will lie down together. You see, Harambe wasn't going to be led about by that three-year-old kid. This is not the eschaton. This is not the fulfillment of the kingdom. And that's why Harambe had to be killed. It was in all likelihood he would have killed the boy. But the infant will play near the cobra's den, and the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. That's at the end of history. That's not now. All the earth will then be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. It's an awe-inspiring vision, and it's picked up by St. Paul in Romans chapter 8, and he says, all the creation is waiting in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. And in the New Testament, you also have this picture of proper treatment of the animals. Animals are God's creatures. He surrounds them with his providential care. By their mere existence, they bless him and give him glory. Look at the birds of the air, how they neither toil nor spin. Jesus compares himself to a hen gathering together under her wings her brood, you know, the Jewish people. He declares God's love for even the sparrow. So this theme of tender treatment towards the beasts, it continues to exist even though the beasts are permitted as food. So you've got what some people think is a contradiction. I don't think it is. But those things continue through the Bible, and they continue through church history. St. Basil is one of the only ones who talks about living. If you try to live your life in imitation of paradise, you'll want to exclude the consumption of animals from their diets. So he didn't forbid consumption of animal flesh, but he said that if you want to live a life which bears witness to the future kingdom, then you'll want to exclude the consumption of animals from their diets. He wouldn't forbid consumption of animals because God permitted it after the fall and after the flood. So there's not a whole lot. You can't find a whole lot in the history of the church that would lead you to say we are obligated to become vegetarians. That's just not part of the Christian tradition. In spite of the high view of animals that we see in St. Francis of Assisi, Thomas Aquinas even, he said there's no sin in using a thing for the purpose for which it is created. In the lower is made perfect in the higher. It's not unlawful if man uses plants for the good of animals and animals for the good of man. And yet he also teaches that animals, even though they're not rational subjects, even though they're not immortal souls, he teaches that a person who treats animals harshly and inhumanely is liable to treat people callously as well. So, again, throughout the Christian tradition, you've got this high view of our responsibility to the animal world, and yet the animal world ranks under the human. We have dominion over the beasts, and they have been given to us as flesh to eat. Now, our problem right now is that Western culture developed in the last century and a half without a whole lot of Christian control and creative influence. A lot of Christianity was around, but it wasn't necessarily forming the great industries of today, including the factory farming industry. I'm not here to solve all these problems. I'm just trying to lay out what I think is clear from the teaching of the church and from the scripture. Look, Christendom is not the kingdom of God. It's never had been. It's always been in need of reform. And so the question is, in this next generation, what we've got big questions coming up about treatment of the environment and treatment of animals. And right now, there are no Christian voices at the highest levels of discussion here. So, look, and in closing here, human beings are prone to abusing the power and the authority that God's given to them. We forget that we're not the final authority. I mean, Benedict XVI thought that the people who run our industrial livestock farms, for example, have lost the proper regard for animals. This leads to unnecessary cruelty. If we take our responsibility for animals more seriously, what would that do? Not entirely certain, but it seems to be clear that that's something we are expected to do from the Dominion Mandate. St. Paul warns against those who were making special diets a matter of salvation. He says, look, for everything God created is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it's received with thanksgiving, because it's consecrated by the word of God in prayer. At another place he writes, it is better not to eat meat or to drink wine or to do anything else that will cause your brother or sister to stumble. So this means we should reflect on what we eat and how we, where we get our meal. But there's no prohibition against the eating of animal flesh. It's important to remember that in the past, Christian champions like William Wilberforce, the great abolitionist of slavery in the British Empire, also led a crusade against cruelty to animals. And in America, Christians were the ones who led in the development of societies for the prevention of cruelty to animals. In this next generation, it's not going to be enough for us to argue the case that human beings possess a dignity and preciousness beyond that given to the beasts. In order for people to believe that, Christians will have to demonstrate that a Catholic way of life, a life that St. Francis pointed to, a life that Isaiah prophesied about, a biblical way of life, elevates the dignity not only of the human, but of all those creatures for whom we have responsibility. And maybe next time there's a Harambe controversy, we'll have a few more Christian voices out there to serve the discussion. You know, we might want to ask ourselves what the Good Shepherd thinks of our treatment of animals. I'm Al Cresta.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by our day sponsor. To celebrate the conclusion of a successful year for the American Heritage Girls Troop MIO-138 out of St. Anastasia Church in Troy. Congratulations to all the girls, and thank you to all the volunteers. If you want to be a day sponsor and or want to say a message for a loved one or friend, call 877-288-1077.
The faculty and staff of Father Gabriel Richard High School congratulate the graduating class of 2017. It was an honor and privilege to serve you, teach you, and learn from you. As you move forward, remember these words of St. John Paul II. The future is in your hearts and in your hands. God is entrusting to you the task, at once difficult and uplifting, of working with Him in the building of the civilization of love.
Beacon Skin and Surgeries is a comprehensive dermatology center on the border of Troy and Rochester Hills, south of M59, and in Dearborn, west of Telegraph. Beacon Skin and Surgeries perform full skin exams and focus on the diagnosis and treatment of all types of skin cancer and precancerous lesions. All are board-certified dermatologists and fellowship-trained surgeons. Call 248-852-1900. Beacon Skin and Surgeries, a beacon for patient care. 248-852-1900.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by the Ave Maria Mutual Funds, investment funds that are designed and screened to be pro-life and pro-family. Six different Ave Maria Mutual Funds are available to help you reach your long-term investment objectives, smart investing, and Catholic values. The number to learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds is 866-AVE-MARIA. That's 866-283-6274 or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Thank you once again for being with me. over this last two-hour period, take what we talked about today and take it to the next step, take it to the next level, go a little deeper into it. You can do that by going to AveMariaRadio.net, where we'll have further information on any of the topics that we discussed today, whether it's why did the Reformation happen or learning to pray as if your life depended on it. Also information from Dr. Meg Meeker on what parents can do to help high schools understand teen sexuality better. And I'm not sure, actually, we'll have a few things up there. I think we'll have Matthew Scully's book, Dominion, posted at AveMariaRadio.net. I don't agree with everything in the book, but it's one of the few approaches to a theology of animals published by a Christian and a conservative. So there's some others, too, by an Englishman by the name of Andrew Lindsay, but it goes beyond what I think the church teaches and adopts the language of animal rights, which I think is a big mistake. Big mistake. But again, the point was, look, if humans are exceptional, does that mean that animals are nothing? Well, not according to the teaching of the church, not according to St. Basil of Caesarea, not according to St. Thomas Aquinas, not according to John Henry Cardinal Newman, not according to Benedict XVI. So we'll take, again, there's more to go in this. This might be an area, you know, if we get around to really working John Paul II's theology of the body, which is primarily focused, of course, on human beings, you know, maybe if we learn how to deal properly with human beings, we can get on to understanding better ways of treating the lower animals. Well, thanks for being with me. Do follow up on those conversations at AveMariaRadio.net.
Cresta in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. The executive producer is Nick Tom. To follow up on any of the guests or information presented on today's program, visit the Cresta Guest Archive at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMaria Radio.net. To listen to this or any other edition of Cresta in the Afternoon, visit the audio archives at AveMariaRadio.net. Or to order a CD of the program, call 734-930-4506 or email orders at AveMariaRadio.net. That's 734-930-4506 or orders at AveMariaRadio.net.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
When you're looking for care for a loved one and you want them to remain independent and living at home, Visiting Angels is ready to serve. Visiting Angels franchises provide the compassionate, professional caregivers needed to deliver the best home care available. You may select your caregiver before service begins. Services include bathing, dressing, errands, light housekeeping, meal preparation, and more, up to 24 hours each day. With over 500 franchised offices nationwide, Visiting Angels is America's choice in senior home care. Employment opportunities and caregiving for Visiting Angels are available. You'll receive the support needed to fulfill your goal of achieving a caring career. Franchise opportunities are also available. Call today at 877-374-LIVE or visit us online at visitingangels.com. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels at 877-374-LIVE. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Hi, this is Father John Ricardo, inviting you to join me as we explore some of the deepest questions that arise in our hearts, questions that shape the way we think, the way we speak, and the way we live. For all of these questions, Christ is the answer.
On our next Christ is the Answer program, Father Ricardo talks to a large group of men about our society and the culture that surrounds us and dilutes our commitment to